The following message is brought to you by Terry Moore. And now, Mr. Moore.
Let's turn over to Mark in chapter 13 for the message today. Mark 13. The current war in Israel has led many to put more thought into the prophesied end of the age. Now, the recent skirmish that is taking place, it began a month or two ago, over a month ago now, at least, it definitely has the potential to become something more than it currently is, something much larger, much more concerning. Now, whether or not it will lead to the beginning of the end is uncertain. Nonetheless, there is more conversation about what is taking place and what to expect as we near the end of the age. People are talking about it on social media. People are talking about it in church services. Many people are even talking about it in the workplace where, you know, religious topics and conversation is not something that is avoided. Many people are starting to worry about it, having great concern. Growing numbers are seeking out ministers who preach the truth about the Bible and end time events. And we, as we had mentioned, have seen a significant increase in web traffic over the last year for a few reasons. And of course, the request for our literature has gone up significantly, almost tripling over this last week. Now, it appears that we are moving closer to what is prophesied to occur. And while the beginning of the end, of course, is of great concern, it is important for us to focus on the fact that God will protect another number of people. He will intervene on behalf of certain people. He is going to have a direct involvement in the events of the end of the age, and not just by unleashing plagues. He will protect certain people as this prophesied great tribulation begins. Speaking of the end time, Christ said this in Mark 13 and verse 19, he said, "For in those days there will be tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the creation, which God created until this time, nor ever shall be." In other words, this is going to be something more significant than any type of tribulation that people may have experienced. Any war that has taken place, including, of course, both the world wars, that this is going to be more severe. And he went on to say in verse 20, "And unless the Lord has shortened those days, no flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, whom he chose, he shortened the days." In other words, unless God intervenes directly, the entire planet would be devoid of human life. And so we see that those things must unfold in our age at a time when people, nations, actually have the ability to wipe out life, human life entirely on the planet. And that is possible through all of these inventions of modern weaponry, nuclear and what have you, atomic. Now, it mentions that God is going to protect certain people, and that is indicated by God shortening the days. And we understand from a number of other scriptures that this will be the case. 2 Chronicles 16 and verse 9 is one where it says that the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong on behalf of those whose heart is loyal to him. So God is looking for this. He's keeping an eye out for those people who are loyal to him, and he will be strong on their behalf. And that is why the best advice that anyone can offer in preparation for times of trouble is not to prep with stockpiles of food and ammunition, but to prepare by becoming more faithful to God in keeping his commandments. And so our loyalty to God is displayed by us through our respect for his moral laws. And that includes the Ten Commandments. It includes the observance of holy days. It includes keeping ourselves unclean from the, keeping ourselves clean from the unclean things in this world. And that's something that we act out by not eating unclean meats. There are a number of laws that show our reverence toward God, our respect for him. They teach us how God wants us to revere him. And they also teach us how we are to treat other people. And we heard a sermon about that a couple of weeks back. And so this is the best type of prepping that you and I can do when anticipating what the future is going to bring. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. You and I may experience difficult times, hard times even now. We might have difficulties in relationships. We might feel like we are suffering loss, and we are to some degree throughout life. But we also have good times. We also have people who are there for us, people who love us, people who want to help us. There is hope for us in this world, and we do experience times of gain. In fact, for every negative, what we might consider to be a negative, that we experience in life, there is a positive. There's not always a positive experience to the negative, but there are an equal, if not more, amount of positives in our lives than there are negatives. And that's something to be very grateful for. Now, one of the enormous positives in our lives is the fact that we have God. That we have God in our lives. And the Apostle Paul said this in regards to our relationship with God in 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 13. He said, "No temptation or tribulation or trial, if you will, has overtaken you except such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted or tested, tried, beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape." And then here's the clincher, "that you may be able to bear it," that you can get through it. You see, the way of escape does not always mean that God is going to remove us from a difficult situation. When temptation or trials come, the most common way is for God to provide us a way to navigate through them, to be able to get through them so that we can learn from the experience, so that we can become stronger through these challenges and struggles, and to recognize the fact that we need help. We all need help through them. We need help from God, of course, first and foremost. But where does God help us? How does God help us most of the time? Through the assistance of other people. He puts people in our midst that are there for us, that can help us, whether with advice or with actual physical help. And so we need to learn to put aside our pride in these ways, in these experiences, and accept help. When it comes to times of extreme danger that I had talked about when we began, disastrous situations, experiences, circumstances, what have you, where there is a potential for injury or loss of life, sometimes there are dramatic interventions by God, miraculous interventions on behalf of his people. Sometimes he intervenes in powerful ways that are blatantly, obviously supernatural. And that is what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about a time when God will intervene on behalf of certain people. There are a number of prophecies indicating that God will keep a number of people safe. However, most of those prophecies are vastly not understood. Many have devised a rapture theory where they believe God is going to whisk people off to heaven, where they will remain in heaven until Christ returns. Some think that God will protect people in their homes or perhaps in hideouts in the mountains or in the wilderness in desolate areas. And so they stockpile food or ammunition or food and ammunition in these locations. And this is a subject that Art and I have discussed many times over the years, and we eventually published a booklet because the majority of believers, even within the Church of God, have been misled or have misconstrued ideas about God's protection and a place of safety. And so I think this is a good time for us to review this subject, to a degree anyway, what the Bible says about God's intervention on behalf of some people at the end of the age. Now, there are several prophecies that we could turn to indicating that the world will become filled with unprecedented evil and violence. It is called Great Tribulation. It is referred to as a time of Jacob's trouble. It is called the Day of the Lord. It is also called the Year of His Wrath, when seven trumpet plagues and then seven bowl plagues will be poured out that will devastate the entire planet. But not everyone on earth is going to experience those things. Not everybody will experience the 14 plagues. In fact, if we go back a bit further before the last year, the Year of His Wrath, not everybody is going to experience everything in the seals of Revelation, the seven seals. Now, I believe that all will be affected in various discomforting ways, but not everyone is going to be affected by the severe circumstances that will affect most of the world. And the reason of this belief is because of a prophecy that was written by the Apostle John. And in this part of the prophecy, Christ's church, his bride, is personified as a woman. And in this prophecy, the woman is taken out of harm's way. She is protected. In Revelation 12, in verse 14, it says that the woman was given two wings of a great eagle that she might fly into the wilderness to her place where she is nourished for a time and times and half a time from the presence of the serpent. And so we see the symbolism here, and the symbolism indicates something miraculous, something powerful, something dramatic, where this woman is portrayed as being given wings, and she flies to a place where she is kept safe and nourished for a specific amount of time. It is referred to as a time, times, and then half a time. So that would be 1, 2, 3 and a half. And so Satan has much to do with the effects of the coming Great Tribulation. He will have a direct role to play in the seven seals of Revelation, and him and his demons will also have roles to play in some of the plagues, the trumpet and bowl plagues. Satan would love to sift true believers like wheat, just like was said of the Apostle Peter. But when the devil's hostility is allowed to be unleashed, he is going to seek to harm the church, the bride, those people. And those people are going to need God's protection. So this prophecy is a crucial piece of the prophetic puzzle, displaying the fact that God will protect a number of people, his church, at the end of the age. And we can be sure that this will happen. And this is going to be the first of probably two or maybe possibly three sermons that I'm going to give on this subject. I know most people like to hear prophecy. Some people would rather hear some other. But I think this is appropriate for the time that we live in so that we understand this subject better. And we can be sure this is going to happen. And so we don't need to question if it will happen. Of course, there might be a question of if it will happen to us, and we'll talk about that in another sermon. What we need to focus on regarding the prophecies of protection and safety is how this is going to happen. When will this happen? For what reason? Why? Is it just to save our skin so that we don't experience pain or suffering? And of course, there is this who. You know, who's going to be kept safe or protected during this time? Now, the answers to these questions are not found in a single place in the Bible. There are several prophecies to consider, and I'm not going to go through every single one of them, but I'm going to turn to a handful of them today. Prophecies, we understand, regarding certain events, are not all given in one place. They're usually spread out among several books. Information that God supplied to people over centuries. And that was, I think, done for a purpose, so that we need the Spirit of God and we need a desire to understand these things, to study the Scriptures, to prove ourselves worthy, to have an understanding of what God is going to do. So the subject matter requires much explanation, and I'm going to begin this series of messages that is going to address just a single question of when. Now, most people, of course, would like to just jump to the question of who. I want to know who. Is it me? Am I going to be taken? Am I going to be kept safe? We'd all like to be protected. The fact is, we'll get to that point later, but the fact is not everybody is going to escape those things. Not even everybody in the Church of God is going to escape those things. Today we're going to consider when God's people will escape as events escalate toward the end of the age and great tribulation. Let's go to Matthew 24. Of course, we would all like to know when the end of the age will begin. We can know. This is something even the disciples of Christ wanted to know when he was teaching them in person. I mean, these people walked the streets of Jerusalem with him. They spoke to him face to face, and they admired the magnificent buildings of the temple. But those structures, as magnificent as they may have been, they didn't impress Christ. In fact, Christ told them that every block of that temple would be taken down. And that prophecy that he gave, the destruction of the temple, occurred. Just as he said, it occurred in 70 AD. Now, the only thing left of that temple is a retaining wall. Some would say, well, that's not every block. But he was talking about every wall of the structure. That's just a retaining wall that sat below the temple, and that's called the Wailing Wall today. Christ's prophetic indication of such destruction prompted the disciples to ask him a question, because they immediately started thinking of the end of the age. In Matthew 24 and verse 3, as he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately, saying, "Tell us, when will these things be, and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?" So Christ proceeded to summarize what would occur several years before he would return. Other prophecies that were later revealed to John and the Apostle Paul, and things that Jesus said next here, is a description of the last 3 to 4 years of his return, and the events that he described proceeding in this chapter. They talk about things that are mentioned in the seven seals and also in the 14 plagues. Since Christ's revelation, false teachers have come, but not to the degree of the end time. There have been many wars, but not the wars and rumors of wars, the famine and the pestilence of the seals. That hasn't started yet. There are yet to be shocking signs in the heavens that Christ spoke of. And so what Christ described as we read through this, and I'm not going to read through all of it, that's why I'm kind of summarizing here. What he described is a number of things that are going to take place during the Great Tribulation. And so in order for people to escape those things that will come to pass, they will need to be protected before they begin. And therefore, the question becomes, when will these things begin? Because that's an indicator as to when people will escape them. And so, as his description of signs that will lead to his return are given here, Christ mentioned a specific incident that will ignite the Great Tribulation. In Matthew 24, in verse 15, he said, "Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand." And then he goes on to talk about people that are in Judea when they see that happen, flee to the mountains. You know, don't go back and try to get anything. Just go. Get out while you can. And so we are told, though, in verse 15, to understand what these words mean. Those who understand, whoever reads, take it to heart. This is a clue. Or perhaps you might also say a cue. And so what Christ spoke of is a prophecy that was recorded by Daniel centuries prior. And that prophecy spoke of an abomination occurring in God's temple. And so let's go back to Daniel, Daniel 11. The prophet Daniel was given many prophecies, amazing prophecies about world events that would occur throughout history. And he had an understanding of Nebuchadnezzar's dream of the golden image, and he was able to explain its meaning. There was a vision he was given, or a dream, of four beasts coming out of the sea. There is the 70 weeks prophecy, and that of a glorious man. And there was also this vision of two kings that Daniel had, called the King of the South and the King of the North. So the prophecy that Christ referenced can be found in two places in the book of Daniel, in Daniel 11 and also in Daniel 12, where the context is about these two kings, and then focusing in on the King of the North. Now, these two kings represent two world leaders, leaders of empires that are going to be at war, and even at war with one another. And so during the military conquests of these two kings, in Daniel 11, in verse 29, it says, and this is speaking of the king of the north, "At the time appointed, he shall return and go toward the south. But it shall not be like the former or the latter, for ships from Cyprus shall come against him, and therefore he shall be grieved and return in rage against the holy covenant and do damage. And so he shall return and show regard for those who forsake the holy covenant." And in verse 31, "And forces shall be mustered by him, and they shall defile the sanctuary fortress, and they shall take away the daily sacrifices and place there the abomination of desolation." So this part of the prophecy here is something that was fulfilled in part in 167 BC, and this is when Antiochus Epiphanes invaded that area, invaded the temple. He placed an image of Zeus in the temple, and he made an unclean offering on the bronze altar of the temple. So that destruction took place long before Christ's prophecy of the end of the age, and so there must be a duality in what we had just read. And, in fact, there is another mention within the framework of Daniel's prophecy here. And so we can know that this prophecy of Daniel is dual because of several things that are mentioned when we continue reading. Now, I'm going to jump forward to verse 35 and say, and read, and it says, "And some of those of understanding shall fall to refine them, purify them, and make them white until the time of the end, because it is still for the appointed time." And so Daniel was told to write that it is the time of the end, and it is still for the appointed time. And so these terms indicate something that is appointed to occur as we near the end. So Antiochus Epiphanes did not entirely fulfill this prophecy of Daniel, the abomination of desolation. What Jesus spoke of and referenced is something that will be done by another world leader, another king of the north, who is also called the man of sin and is portrayed as a beast. And so what this future king will do is a cue. And the words that follow speak of events leading up to people being protected at the end of the age. And I'm going to read several of them now, beginning in verse 36. "Then the king shall do according to his own. He will exalt and magnify himself above every god, shall speak blasphemies against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the wrath has been accomplished. For what has been determined shall be done. He shall regard neither the god of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor regard any god, for he shall exalt himself above them all." And there are a number of things that could be said or interpreted from that description of this man of sin. "But in their place he shall honor a god of fortresses, and a god which his fathers did not know. He shall honor with gold and silver, with precious stones and pleasant things. He shall act against the strongest fortresses with a foreign god, which he shall acknowledge and advance its glory. And he shall cause them to rule over many and divide the land for gain." Now here we go, moving toward the event that is going to prompt God to keep a number of people safe. "At the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots, horsemen, and with many ships. He shall enter the countries, overwhelm them, and pass through." And it's our understanding that the king of the south is a leader of an Arab confederacy. "He shall enter the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape from his hand." In other words, he will not attack these people, Edom, Moab, and the prominent people of Ammon. And those people, if you look at the history, it points to Turkey and Jordan. "He shall stretch out his hand against the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. He shall have power over the treasures of gold and silver and over all the precious things of Egypt. Also the Libyans and the Ethiopians shall follow at his heels. But news from the east and the north shall trouble him, and therefore he shall go out with great fury to destroy and annihilate many." And so he will invade. He will invade the south, the Middle East. But there will be news coming from the east and the north, and that we believe that's referring to people of Asia and Russia. "And he shall go out with great fury to destroy and annihilate many." And it says in verse 45, "And he shall plant the tents of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain, yet he shall come to his end, and no one will help him." So in other words, the seas, between the seas, it's talking about the Mediterranean and the Dead Seas. And he's going to plant a palace, or some might say a residence or a headquarters, in this location of the glorious holy mountain. It's referring to Jerusalem. And so there is a second abomination of desolation that is mentioned in this prophecy here as we continue. It's after the king of the north invades and takes control of Jerusalem. He will establish a headquarters in Jerusalem between the Mediterranean and the Dead Seas. He will control the temple area, and he will stop sacrifices to God that will be regularly given in that place. Now, some might be thinking, well, there are no sacrifices to God being given on a regular basis in the temple area. There's no temple to God in Jerusalem right now. Nothing built by the Jews. Well, you're correct. Not right now. Not yet. That is one of the reasons we can know that the wars and rumors and wars that Christ had spoken of, that those seals have not yet begun to be opened. And so Christ's prophecy in Matthew 24 points to seals of revelation, and those seals are going to begin to be opened after sacrifices have been stopped. And so we know there are a few things that must occur. Since sacrifices have not yet started, since there is no temple, since we don't have a person that is leading a world power in out of Europe, the north of Jerusalem, we understand that these things haven't begun yet. Well, they could happen very quickly, though. That's the point. It wouldn't take a lot to get this ball rolling, and we see that it might already be rolling. Since sacrifices have not yet started, the skirmishes in the Middle East right now, as troubling as they might be to us, and to especially to others, people that live there and are experiencing them firsthand, they are not the beginning of the end. Regarding when these things will be and when people will divinely escape those things that are going to come, Daniel continued to write many things that have to do with the beginning of the end, even up to the end. But Daniel did not understand what these things meant. It's interesting in verse 4 here of chapter 12, I'm going to jump forward here so that we can just focus on answering the question for today, of when people will be kept safe. Daniel said, said to Daniel, "But you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase." And so you could say that, you know, we're living in a time where knowledge is increased on an enormous scale, and people are going back and forth, running to and fro, doing who knows what. It seems like we're all just like living in a tyranny of the urgent here. But Daniel is told to seal it up, that it's not going to be something that will be understood until those things start to unfold. And again, after more details are given to the prophet, in verse 8 here it says, Daniel said, "Although I heard, I did not understand. And then I said, 'My Lord, what shall be the end of these things?' And he said, 'Go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end.'" And so we have an understanding of many of these things. I don't think we understand everything in all of these prophecies, but we have a fair understanding of many of them. And we could go through a bunch of the details in these prophecies of Daniel and talk about them, but we would digress from the main point, which is when people will be protected. But something that is worth noting regarding this question of when people will be kept safe are some numbers here in Daniel 12 and verse 11. And this is where we get to the heart of what Christ said when he referenced the abomination of desolation. Daniel 12 and verse 11, "And from the time that the daily sacrifice is taken away and the abomination of desolation is set up, there shall be 1,290 days. Blessed is he who waits and comes to the 1,335 days." And then interestingly, Daniel is told to go your way till the end, for you shall rest, and you will arise to your inheritance at the end of the day, is something very comforting, I think, to the prophet. Now, there are several opinions about the meaning of 1,290 days and 1,335 days, and of course, this is directly related to 1,260 days. But there can be only one answer, and I think we know what that answer is. You see, the period from the beginning of the Great Tribulation to the first resurrection will be, as we had read in Revelation 12, a time, times, and half a time. That term refers to 3.5 years. Other prophecies refer to it as 42 months and 1,260 days. And those numbers can be found in Revelation 11 and verse 2, also chapter 12, verses 6 and 14. And so the context of the prophecy that we had read a part of here in Daniel 11 and 12, the context is the king of the north. It begins with the king of the north. And it appears that Daniel described three significant achievements by this beastly empire that will lead up to the time, times, and half a time, the 3.5 year period known as Great Tribulation. And so the three achievements are that the beast will invade the Middle East and powerfully take over a central area. The second achievement is that he will establish a residence or a palace or headquarters, if you will, in the Holy Land, and he will stop the sacrifices. The third achievement, and I don't mean this in a positive way, of course this man of sin will think it's positive, and many that follow him will think it's positive, is that the abomination of desolation will occur, and that is the event that will trigger the beginning of Great Tribulation, the beginning of the end of the age. 2 Thessalonians and verse 2, 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 3, the Apostle Paul was an apostle sent by God to give enormous guidance and instruction to not just Gentiles, but also to the church of God. And many people don't recognize him as being a prophet, but I suppose that term is a matter of context. But he prophesied about a number of things that are highly significant. And the Apostle Paul prophesied of this man's blasphemy, stating that this man will sit in the temple and he will declare himself to be a god. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 3, it says, "Let no one deceive you by any means, for that day will not come unless the falling away comes first and the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God." Now this fits Daniel's prophecy. It fits Christ's reference to the abomination of desolation. It speaks of an abominable act that will take place in a temple dedicated to the great God, a temple that is built by Jews. They don't have to necessarily be of the tribe of Judah. That is a term that refers to a number of tribes of Israel. But a temple that is being used by descendants of Aaron, Levites. This reference to a man of sin is not talking about somebody within the church of God. There's a minister that said something to this effect, and we gave a sermon on that a number of years ago, describing the man of sin and how we can know that it's not somebody within the Church of God. It's kind of, in my opinion, a ridiculous assertion. But the main focus of all the prophecy that we have read so far, the main focus is the resurrection of the saints. That's always something that is included in the prophecies that God has given. God's plan points out that event as being highly significant and even an indicator of a number of other things, a place where we can use to like say, okay, well, this is going to happen here, and that way we can determine when other things are supposed to occur. The resurrection is the hope of all considered to be God's people. It's called a mystery that many are called to, but Christ said few will be chosen for. And most prophecies use the first resurrection as a marker to indicate when other things will occur. And so with this in mind, we suggest that 1,335 days, those days that were mentioned in Daniel chapter 12, 1,335 days before the resurrection, the king of the north will invade the Middle East. Now, the invasion culminates 45 days later when the beast establishes a residence, palace, or headquarters in the Holy Land. And so 1,290 days before the resurrection of the saints, the beast will take control of the temple, and he will stop the sacrifices. And then just 30 days later, the man of sin performs the abomination of desolation. That is the cue for the beginning of great tribulation, just as Christ has instructed. That tribulation will last more than 3 years, but the first resurrection will occur 42 months later, 1,260 days later, a time and half a time after the abomination of desolation. And therefore, the most significant of prophetic accomplishments by the beast, the man of sin, this individual also called a king of the north, leading up to the first resurrection, it begins 1,335 days prior to the first resurrection. Matthew 24 Christ gave a warning to people in Jerusalem that when they see these things occurring, they should flee. Now, it would be a good idea, in my opinion, my humble opinion, I think it would be a good idea to get out of that area when invasion begins, or before it begins, when we know when the man of sin is revealed, maybe it's time to get out. But that's just me. Christ said that once the abomination of desolation is set up, get out immediately, right away. Do not hesitate. In Matthew 24, in verse 15, it says, "Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop not go down to take anything out of his house, and let him who is in the field not go back to get his clothes. But woe to those who are pregnant and those who are nursing babies in those days, and pray that your flight may not be in the winter or on the Sabbath. For then there will be great tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time, nor ever shall be." And so it is that once the abomination takes place, get out. Don't go back for anything. Just leave. Just get out. Because it is going to become a hotbed of hostile activity in that area. And it is going to be difficult for some people to get out, which is why he said, pray don't that it, this doesn't happen in the winter. It's going to add to your difficulties, or it's going to be harder for people that are pregnant or have nursing babies. Luke 17, if you just go over a few books to Luke 17, another place where this is mentioned that adds some more information. There are prophecies by Daniel, by Christ, by the Apostle Paul, by the Apostle John, and other prophecies that I haven't mentioned that prophesy of a time when a beastly empire is going to invade the Middle East. There will be a functioning temple at that time, a third temple, if you will. It will exist. There will be descendants of Aaron, Levites, some call them the Kohen, that they will be functioning priests in the temple. They will be offering sacrifices. The Sabbath will be observed in this area in some shape or form, and even by law around this area. And so there will be gates in secured parts of Jerusalem that will be closed on the Sabbath, which is why I think he said, pray that this doesn't occur on the Sabbath, because some of these areas are going to be difficult to get through. Travel on foot will be harder for those people that might be, those women that might be pregnant or nursing children. If it's wintertime, there's going to be further demands on the travel. And so the abomination and great tribulation will begin 75 days after the invasion. 75 days after 1,335 days, it will begin. And that is why Christ warned people not to go back for anything. Get out while you can. Luke 17 and verse 31. In that day he was on the housetop, and his goods are in the house. Let him not come down to take them away. And likewise, the one who is in the field, let him not turn back. Remember Lot's wife. Don't look back. Go, get out. Don't think, oh, I wish I would have done this, or I wish I would have done that, or I'm really going to miss those people, or that's it, or that area. No, get out. Verse 33, whoever seeks to save his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life will preserve it. So Jerusalem is going to be surrounded by armies that will be eliminating resistance to the invasion, and they will be protecting this man of sin who will establish a headquarters, and he will enter the temple. He will declare himself to be a god. And once this occurs, people in this location are warned, don't look back. Get out. They have to flee. But that description or that advice is not talking about people fleeing to a place of safety. It's not the prophesied protection of God's people. It's good advice. God has something else planned. And in his next words, Jesus said this in Luke 17 and verse 34, I tell you, in that night there will be two men in one bed. The one will be taken, the other will be left. Two women will be grinding together. The one will be taken and the other left. Two men will be in the field. The one will be taken and the other left. And these are some of the scriptures that has prompted some to devise a rapture theory. But what is being related to us here is that there will be people who in Jerusalem who understand what is happening. They will flee to the mountains. They will get out when this abomination of desolation is set up. But those who escape that area to avoid being harmed, they won't be there for long, at least those people that God says that he will protect. People aren't going to have time to get hungry or to get cold. They're not going to need anything when they flee. Christ said that they will be taken in that night. So this is not going to be a long drawn out process, because on the half of our planet, one half of the planet, it will be night. People will be sleeping in their beds. On the other half, it will be daylight. People will be working. And that is why Christ said that some will be in bed, others will be at work. Some will be taken, others will be left. That is when the time of protection will begin, as the great tribulation begins. That is how we can know when people will be protected. And so next week, we're going to continue with the topic. Maybe next week, it might be the week after, but the next time that I speak, I should say, we will be continuing with the topic by discussing how people will escape and be protected at the end of the age.